This is the Quality News Network. An underground explosion near New York's Grand Central Station is causing quite a commotion for evening commuters. Con Ed spokesman said an operational problem caused high-pressure pipes to burst and steam to shoot up like a geyser, ripping a large hole in the street and blowing out nearby windows. Authorities insist there is no terrorism involved. The wife of murdered Wall Street Journal reporter Daniel Pearl is suing the terrorists responsible for killing her husband. In a New York court, Marianne Pearl is seeking an unspecified amount of money from Pakistan's largest bank and 23 individuals. Iraq's top al-Qaeda chief was arrested in Mosul earlier this month. The U.S. command says during interrogation, Abu Saeed claimed Iraq's terrorists receive important direction from al-Qaeda leaders in other countries. Republican senators blocked Democratic senators' latest attempt to force a withdrawal of U.S. troops from Iraq despite an all-night debate. Republicans called the entire process political theater. The nuclear power plant damaged in Monday's earthquake in northwest Japan suffered more damage than was first announced by authorities. Dozens of problems were exposed to a shocked public yesterday, including the revelation that 50% more radioactive water spewed into the Sea of Japan than originally was reported. The plant is shut down indefinitely by order of the town's mayor, where the plant is located. Tokyo Electric is downplaying any danger. New cartography shows a fault line running directly beneath the reactor. The UN's nuclear watchdog agency confirmed today North Korea has shut down all five of their nuclear facilities. Inspectors want full dismantlement so that North Korea doesn't simply turn them back on. Rescuers are sifting through the wreckage of Brazil's worst air disaster after an Airbus 320 skidded off a slick runway last night in Sao Paulo. The jet slammed into a gas station and an airport building, killing all 186 aboard and at least 15 people on the ground. Two black boxes have been recovered. Late word is that the pilot tried to pull out of his landing on the very short, rain-soaked runway. U.S. drug agents have arrested a Mexican drug cartel leader, considered one of the most wanted suspects in America. DEA officers grabbed him when he crossed the border to go grocery shopping in McAllen, Texas. You're listening to the Quality News Network, science and business news coming up next.
What are you doing?
Fertilizing the lawn. Do you want to help?
No, not really. But didn't you just do that last week?
Yeah, I did. I want the lawn to be really lush and green this year.
Dad, what happens when those sprinklers come on?
We give the grass a good long drink.
That water runs off with the fertilizer in it and gets into the bay, where it can harm the fish.
So what should I do?
Use just the minimum recommended amount. The lawn will be just as green, and you'll be saving our ocean.
Taking care of the marine sanctuary is your duty. From Mayos at Monterey High.
Hello, I'm CHP Officer Felix Isararas. Law enforcement officers throughout the state are committed to removing drunk drivers from California roadways before they kill or injure themselves, or worse, an innocent victim. Right now, local law enforcement and the CHP are conducting DUI checkpoints to find drunk drivers and keep California roads safe.
Always designate a sober driver. And if you see a drunk driver on the road, call 911. A message from the Office of Traffic Safety and California Highway Patrol.
There's new hope for Sudan's Darfur region. A huge underground lake has been discovered, capable of supporting as many as 1,000 wells. Much of the conflict in the area revolves around the need for and the lack of water. Archaeologists are urging Jordanian officials to put the brakes on tourist development near the ancient ruins of Petra, recently named one of the Seven Wonders of the World. 11 of America's largest food companies, including McDonald's, General Mills, PepsiCo, and Campbell Soup, have agreed to limit advertising aimed at children under 12. According to a new medical study, a diet favoring fresh fruits and vegetables doesn't appear to prevent the return of breast cancer. China has adopted a law to restrict the length of time teenagers spend playing games online. If they play for more than 3 hours, the points earned in competition begin to go down. Dow & Company's board of directors has approved its sale to Rupert Murdoch. The $5 billion deal must now be approved by a controlling shareholder, the Bancroft family. IBM posted double-digit growth in net income, exceeding Wall Street expectations. Costs for food and energy dropped in June, improving benchmark figures for wholesale inflation and industrial production. Oil is trading at $74.39 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange at the moment and at the close of Wall Street today. The Dow fell down 53 points, wrapping up at 13,918, and the S&P 500 was down 3. There's more on our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Michael Coleman.
Quickly come to the show! Radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and morning, world. Welcome to Book 17, Chapter 17, and Verse 17 of Strictly Confidential. I am your slightly demented, slightly messy, slightly elderly, and very gay host, Peter Godbold. Welcome to the GLBT version of Conversation Radio. You know, I've been wondering if I should perhaps come up with an air name. Maybe I could be the gay talk show host formerly known as Peter Godbold, or just Madonna, or any number of... I maybe could use a one-word name. That might be easier than Peter Godbold. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com. Find links to all of the guests, as well as to the chat room and the Head On Radio Network main site. You can find out about all the progressive programming on the horn. Again, the link for all of that and more is strictlyconfidentialradio.com. And praise the Lord and pass the grits. The toll-free lines are back in operation. I think that, you know, since the religion industry gave the gay folks control of the weather and say that's why hurricanes come, I think Agnes must have really pissed off a drag queen because they've been hitting the studio hard. The telephone number for, and it's toll-free, by the way, the telephone number is 877-4, the number 4, head-on. That's 877, the number 4, head-on. Or if you prefer digits, 877-443-2366. If you have a toll-free calling plan that where you have unlimited long distance, you can save us a nickel by using 304-658-3333. That rings in West Virginia. An email arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com. That's Peter at headonradionetwork.com. Thank you again for all of the wonderful emails and the guest requests. Reminding you, if there are guests you would like to hear on Strictly Confidential, please drop me a note. I'll do my very best to have them on the show. You are appreciated, and I do listen. Tonight's guest who will be joining us at 30 is Lisa Nash. She is a registered nurse and the Florida Statewide Education Coordinator for AIDS Healthcare Foundation. Now, I've got to tell you, this is not what you're expecting. If you're expecting a nice little registered nurse who's going to come on and tell all the folks to take their pills on time, that ain't it. There's big doo-doo going on in Florida. Are you surprised? I'm not at all surprised. It involves co-opting health care for AIDS, HIV-positive folks. It involves bad behavior from one of the legislatures. It's a huge story. I'm not even going to begin to get into it. She will be our expert, and she will tell us all the details. But it's really juicy. I would love to just rush right in and tell you, but I'm not going to do it. Lisa Nash is joining us at 9:30. And let's see. Oh, yeah, we have a wonderful guest tomorrow night, too. Her name is Julia Serrano. Now, she's a writer and spoken word performer and a trans activist and a biologist. And I'm looking forward to speaking with her. She is a delightful person and will be our first transsexual on the show. And, oh, yes, I need to tell you, Friday we have Cynthia Manley as a guest. Cynthia Manley closes the show every evening. I say, this is Cynthia Manley reminding you too, and Agnes immediately cuts into her track of Stand. And I think it's about time you guys met Cynthia Manley and found out just why she means so much to the Strictly Confidential radio show. Cynthia will join us Friday night at 9 p.m. Eastern. And I have caller Jim on the line. Welcome to Strictly Confidential, Jim.
Good evening.
Good evening, sir. How are you this evening?
Okay. Pretty good. Pretty good.
Excellent.
Well, I have a name that you might be able to use for your nom de guerre.
Oh, good. Coming from you, this ought to be a treasure. Is it a one-word name, or do I get two words?
Get two words.
Okay.
Okay. Nephonious Appellation.
Nephonious Appellation?
A Euphonious Appellation. And I take that from one of those W.C. Fields films, okay?
Okay.
One with Bay West talking in My Little Chickadee. But I think you're a good name.
Oh, yes.
Miss Juice.
I have to admit, it does sound rather Southern, rather of the Dukes of Hazzard, Boss Hoggish.
Well, hell, it beats Coco Peru or Art Deco or whatever.
Art Deco, that wouldn't have crossed my mind in a million years.
Oh, good.
Oh, Jesus.
Listen, I just want to tell you something funny before you get into your program, okay, if you don't mind, okay?
Okay, no, 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 that's what we're here for. What you got?
Well, this is something that, well, actually, two funny stories. I heard Bob talking about passing currency and stuff like that, mutilating currency for political reasons.
Yeah, I think there was a conversation about writing or crossing something out and crossing something out on car tags. I was busy doing show prep. I missed a lot of that.
Well, this is a personal experience. When I was in Amsterdam about 25 years ago, I went into one of these boutiques. We'll just leave that as it is, okay? And
oh, Jim, let's do a whole show on it.
And I had,
okay.
And just for a joke, I just picked up as a novelty a couple of dollar bills. Of course, in the center of the dollar bill was not George Washington. I'm not going to tell you what was in there. And I just forgot about it, basically. And so we tucked it away. And I said, this is something I just give to somebody for Christmas as a gag gift or whatever. But I left one of these bills in my wallet. And I was in, like, a Rite Aid, and I accidentally passed that thing.
Oh, my God, they took it?
Well, they took it. And the lady behind the counter said, sir, yes, this is not legal currency.
Oh, my stars.
And I said,
I could just imagine.
You know, whoops. I was just like yeah. Like in Whoops is when you douche with Drano.
Yes. Yeah, I'm sure there was a terrible feeling in your heart about that second. A Rite Aid in the rural, and it's maybe not rural, but at least in the South, that's got to be horrifying.
Well, I think about anywhere it would be. But anyway, the second thing was a story I heard and from this guy from Knoxville, Tennessee. And I was at a party. This is like in the 80s. And this guy was telling me about his, or telling a group of people about his sexual misadventures. And I'll just call this story, Looking for Love in All the Wrong Places.
Okay.
And apparently, you know, you were talking about people who frequented bathrooms, things like that, in search of whatever. Well, this guy did this. This was his thing. I don't know if it was because of the, why do people do stuff? I don't know. But anyway, he said that he had gone to a restroom in a mall outside Knoxville, Tennessee. And
yes.
Was doing one of the 14 stations of the cross in this particular place. And
oh, Jesus, Jim. Oh, Jesus. Okay, we're doing good here. We're doing good. All the lights are on. Nobody's kicked us off the air. You go for it. Go ahead. We're good.
Well, anyway, it's pretty tragic in a way. I thought, for us, I can't believe you're telling this thing yourself. And I said, good Lord. But he apparently was trying to view or reconnoiter the individual in the stall next to him and was holding on to the, like, the seat of the, apparatus in there and was bending over.
Good Lord.
And when he did, the bolt broke. He did a complete somersault, landed on his head, wound up with a concussion and 7 stitches, and had to be taken to the hospital by an ambulance.
Oh, dear Lord. I'm sure the sheriff's department showed up in the whole 9 yards, right?
No, he said that didn't happen. He just said the mall security people were just anxious to just get him out of there. They just... Well, no one would believe what had happened, you know. I mean, it's just too incredulous to even, you know, consider. And I just looked at him and I said, really?
And why are you sharing this with me, sir?
Well, I'm not even
oh my
the third
God.
One. You know, back in 1980 at Christmas, there was an Episcopal minister who had just finished his PhD, and his dissertation was graffiti on places like this. And he had the bound copy of an approved PhD, and I'm not going to tell you which school it was from. It was from a Northeastern university in Boston. And it had been approved. And he had gone throughout the entire Eastern Seaboard and had collected all this graffiti and had somehow collated it demographically and by every other standard that is used, you know, for statisticians about the types of things that he saw. And I said, and the man was wearing his collar that night. And I thought to myself, well, there it is. There you have it.
What are you going to do? You know, in the South, weird stuff happens, doesn't it, Jim? It's really, really quite an amazing thing to grow up down here. You just never know what you're going to run into.
Peter, I have seen things that people would not believe, and if I wrote a book, well, what I could tell you would just absolutely blow your mind. And, you know.
Well, if you do write a book, we could run promos for you.
The only thing I could call the book, you know, and there was a time in my life, but, well, let's put it this way. We all change our mode of behavior, and we all sort of like become a little more conservative, at least I have. But in those days, I was, you know, anything goes, as Cole Porter would say. And
yes.
The only thing I could call that book, and I think the title has already been used, it's called Indecent Exposure. Because of
okay.
Because to collate some of the stories and to put them together about, and we're not just talking about gay people, we're talking about great people, all kinds of people, and the stuff that I have heard, and you know, and some of the things I've personally witnessed, it would it might make an interesting sociological survey of America in the 80s to the 90s. Who knows? Maybe I'm
The mansions and the magnolias hide many secrets, don't they, Jim?
Oh, they certainly do. Let me tell you. It's just incredible. Maybe it's because of the heat. Maybe it's because of the excess use of skin. Who knows?
Yes, maybe the heat. You know, we're under a lot of pressure to do everything really fast because we know the heat will make us spoil eventually.
Well, you got it. There it is, and there you have it. So I decided I would move north, and if they say come up the road, and but when I arrived in Washington, D.C., well, you know what Washington is. It's a town of what I think John F. Kennedy called of northern manners and southern way of attacking the work ethic. So who knows?
Interesting.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
interesting.
It is. And how are you this evening?
Jim, I'm well. It has been an interesting day. It's hotter than hell down here. In fact, there were some people I spoke with on the phone today from South Florida who had just visited North Florida, the Tallahassee area yesterday, and they were telling me that they were amazed that it seemed even hotter up here than in South Florida. That it's a terrible thing for a Southern Belle to go through. It really is. You can't keep your mascara on right. Everything stretches and falls. You know, it's not good weather for looking good.
Well, I mean, not everybody can be Scarlett O'Hara or whomever, or, you know, maybe you had, I would suggest maybe a simple shift or a chemise or something like that. Just ditch the Kremlins and all that other stuff. What about it? I'm just a fashion guy.
Yes,
you know?
Yes, I should ditch the cradle. Jim, that's just perfect. In fact, that might even be a good radio name, Crunlin.
Well, you got it. I mean, you know, or Mistress Formica.
Oh, yes. Yes, there was a joke about Formica dinette at one point, if I'm thinking, that was hysterical.
Well, you know, I can remember years ago they had this thing in the National Lampoon about this country western star called Donna Dinette.
Yes.
And she she basically was this creature in this huge blonde wig. I mean, she must have had at least 180 pounds of hot air blown into that thing. And they had a series of photographs of her, and the first one was of Donna with the guitar, and it said, "Today's casual strumming may be tomorrow's hit tune." Second one was Donna had written a song called "Patsy, Will, and Dag," and she would only travel by bus. She wouldn't travel by airplane. And this song was dedicated to Patsy Cline, Will Rogers, and Dag Hammarskjöld, all of whom had died in airline crash.
Yes, yes.
Damnedest thing you've ever seen in your life. And I used to love that magazine. And I can remember they would ask you to send in pictures of things, and you get $5. And outside Fort Jackson, where I worked, there was a big cab company. It was called Dyke's Taxi.
Oh, perfect. Spell with a Y?
Yeah.
Okay.
And on the other side of town was a place called Glasscock.
Oh, God.
Well, I sent those in and got $10 from them.
Oh, that's perfect. That's like the... what is it, Reader's Digest or some of the magazines that show odd street signs, you know, across America? That's perfect. You take the Dykes to the Glasscock.
I guess. I don't know. But I thought to myself that was pretty interesting to see. And that was a good magazine. It really was. You know, they had a lot of good stuff in there. And but I just thought I would just share a few thoughts with you. And I'm drinking a scotch and water and baking a broccoli casserole. So, you know, how the best is that?
Well, that sounds marvelous. In fact, if with that broccoli casserole, that qualifies you for joining the Methodist Church. You know, there's an old saying about the Methodist Church ladies, not that you're a church lady, but there's still an old saying that says that they always carry a casserole in their purse.
I guess they do. So, I mean, you know, honestly, truly, it's a quiet evening. It's a better evening. Much better thing to say than I was last week, and I'm glad of it. So I just thought I would...
I am too, Jim.
...share a few things with you as you open your show and deal with more serious subjects, which I know you need to get into, but...
The whole show's going in the toilet now, because the opening story is actually more information about that noggle guy down in Fort Lauderdale with the toilets.
Really?
So, yes, it looks like we're going to be doing the toilet hour. So,
well, you
thank God
bar, there used to be a bar in New York City, and Jackie Kennedy would go there. It's called Les Toilettes. One of those after-hours clubs. I'm not kidding. I mean, I had a good friend who worked at Paramount in New York, and he, when I was teaching school, before I started working for the government, you know, I had my summers off, and I used to go to New York and spend 6 weeks up there with him. And so, actually, Gloria Swanson had tried to get him to catalog all her films, and when he went to her apartment in New York, he said there was so much nitrate-based film in there that there was enough TNT to blow the whole part of Manhattan off. So he said, "Good Lord, get out of there." And he told me, he said,
"Oh, like Mrs. O'Leary's cap." That's funny.
Well, I mean, you know, the stuff had literally turned brown in the can. And that stuff, you know, all those films back before 1950-something were made of nitrate-based film and nitrate-based stock. And it had all... deteriorated to the point that they had to get the Army Corps of Engineers in there to take it out.
This is Gloria Swanson's place?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She was around until 1975. This is like in the early 70s when this happened.
I see. I just saw Sunset Boulevard again over the weekend, or this past weekend, and I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Oh, she was incredible in that. She really was. So was... So were so many other people, like, you know, Hedda Hopper, or I guess it was Hedda Hopper, who was, you know, doing her live report after she had killed William Holden, that type thing.
Yes, she did. From sitting on Norma Desmond's bed, she did that report. It was fabulous.
I just thought to myself, love that hat. Must do lunch.
Oh, that's priceless.
Just stop me when it's gone on too long, Peter, because I know you have your own agenda for the evening, but... Like I said, I just want to say, aloha. Oliente, we start talking in Pig Latin and stuff like that, like Divine used to do. God rest her soul.
Yeah, God rest her soul. Well, Jim, thank you so much for calling. We do have a guest coming up at the bottom of the hour, and I'm going to try to get rid of all the toilet topics before this guest comes on, and I appreciate your calling.
Well, thank you. I hope it hadn't been too risque, but I thought, well, why not? What the hell? Thanks.
Well, all I know is you're welcome, sir, and all I know is the lights are all on, so they haven't disconnected us, so we're good shape.
Good, good.
And I'll see you later, Jim.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay. Good night, sir. Oh, my. That's Caller Jim. You never, ever know what to expect from Caller Jim. And, in fact, that leads right into the toilet mayor. And I'm bringing up toilet mayor because there's a couple of new pointers I wanted to bring out to you. If you recall the toilet mayor from Fort Lauderdale, he was the one who was claiming that there was a huge amount of sex going on in the men's toilets, and the police were going, what sex, what toilets? And the police were going, oh, there's no evidence, no reports, no arrests. This is a direct quote from Sergeant Frank Sousa. In any case, Jim Noggle is typically, his ignorance, it's either ignorance or just plain outright lying. Either way, it's just earth-shattering. He typically does this, you know, some sort of twisted thing, people, and it's all about sex, and it fuels this controversy and confrontation, and then he always ends it with, he's going to save Fort Lauderdale. What is it? Is it some kind of a Christ complex for these people? It's just so difficult to wrap your head around it. Oh, my. And he pulled the same thing at the Stonewall Library. We talked about the Stonewall Library, too. But in any case, at this point in time, there's a little something I want you to do. The if you will go to sun-sentinel.com, that's sun-sentinel.com, and scroll down to about the middle of the page. In the right-hand column, you'll see this is a newspaper, by the way. You'll see a vote for Mayor Noggland to resign. Yes or no or undecided. So if you'd like to visit that site, it's just a way to perhaps make him a little bit uncomfortable. The Sun Sentinel is doing a survey down there in South Florida about that. And the other thing that's come up is Equality Florida is actively soliciting folks to mail him toilet paper so that he can wipe his dirty mind. You can send him a whole roll, or you can send him just a few sheets in an envelope. By all means, it has to be new toilet paper. Don't send anything with any bodily fluids on it, because the police will come down you very quickly for sending a biohazard to the mail. But you can. There's a long, complicated address, but I can simplify it for you. If you want to send a roll of toilet paper or even a few new sheets of toilet paper to the mayor, send it to Mayor, City Hall, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, 33301. That's Mayor, City Hall, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, 33301. And you can register your opinion of our mayor, who is controlled by the Carl Snake Ministries and is a the Kennedy guy down there. What's his name? Kennedy of the Carl Snake Ministries. He also has several other plants, I believe, in government in South Florida. And let's see, 928. Oh, yes, there's one other thing I'd like you to do. If you'll recall, a few weeks ago, we had a guest, Glenn Rivera. Glenn Rivera is the world's most fabulous DJ. Well, Glenn Rivera does a music set on a program. It's called Disco 935. It's the rhythm and soul of New York. But Glenn is up for this month's DJ of the Month, and he is well-deserving of it. So if you'd like to vote for Glenn, just send an email to disco935@on.net. That's disco 935 at OPTONLINE.net. And all you have to do is put in the subject line, I vote for Glenn. And it is the bottom of the hour. And so we'll go ahead and do that. And we'll be back pretty quickly. And we'll come up on the break. You're listening to Strictly Confidential. And I'm your host, Peter Godbold. We'll be right back.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters, all you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
Changing the way you hear music, Billy Shears.
Join us this Saturday night at 9 p.m. for Night Sounds, for an evening of music and more. And stop by the head-on chat room. I'll be there. Will you?
Whenever dark is falling, you know the spirit of the party starts to come alive till the day.
For you, Saturday night, be there.
Hi, I'm V.
And I'm John.
And we're from Fierce, a community organization for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer questioning youth of color in New York City.
For many years, the Christian Friendship here has been a place for our community, a space where we can all go and be ourselves.
A space where healthcare providers can come and provide free HIV testing and information to other services.
However, these services and safe space are being threatened.
To become a member of Fierce and help keep our Christopher Pierce safe for queer and trans people, contact us at 646-336-6789 or visit our website at fiercenyc.org.
And we're back with our guest. Lisa Nash is a registered nurse and side education coordinator for AIDS Healthcare Foundation, also known as Positive Healthcare. Lisa became a nurse to honor extraordinary hospice nurses who provided compassionate care for a dear friend of hers, Scott, who died of AIDS in 1990. Lisa herself worked as a hospice care nurse before she joined the AIDS Healthcare Foundation, and as a RN care manager in 2003. She's helped hundreds and hundreds of people in Florida living with HIV and AIDS. And as the statewide education coordinator, she's developed more than 40 educational presentation modules that are used for training. On the weekends, she can be found speaking to patients at support groups and finding out, making sure that they have the information they need to get the most out of their lives with HIV AIDS treatment. And she even took a week of her vacation time to volunteer for a recent AIDS benefit. This is a person who not only talks the talk, she actually walks the walk. And I'm so pleased to welcome you aboard. Welcome, Lisa.
Hello?
Hello. Hello. Hi. Hello to you.
Good evening.
Greetings to you. Good evening. I was telling the folks earlier that we had... We had you as a guest when the show first started, and it wasn't going to be what they expected, that we weren't going to have this nice little nurse that said, everybody take your medicine, but you had some bigger fish to fry this evening.
Yes, I did. I was actually out at a dinner this evening that was sponsored at one of our local AIDS service organizations. It was sponsored by our pharmacy, which we have a line of business. A pharmacy in the state of Florida. We're the only not-for-profit pharmacy in the state of Florida. The pharmacy that's sponsored through Positive Healthcare, it's Positive Healthcare Pharmacies. And our pharmacy, every dollar that they make in profit, 95 cents of that dollar goes back into our programs to help our clinics throughout the world. We're in 30 countries, and we touch 100,000 lives through the work that we do with AIDS Healthcare Foundation, and in Florida, we're known as Positive Healthcare.
Wow.
So I was a little busy tonight. I was actually helping cook tonight before I got here, so now I've had some time to get back and just relax a little bit before I came on air. So I thank you for allowing me this time, and I'd like to just let everyone
know delighted to have you.
Part of our mission and part of me being on the radio this evening is that our Governor Chris has been silent on the subject of HIV and AIDS for the last 6 months since he's been in office. And part of our awareness that we're doing is trying to bring to the forefront for the state of Florida the subject of HIV and AIDS.
And that's a, you know, the new governor is a quite a mix, is he not? I don't ever seem to know quite what to expect from him. And he has been curiously silent about the whole issue in Florida, and in fact, he's remaining silent about a fellow named Hayes too, who's he's been asked to repudiate Hayes for some slurs I believe he made to some nurses from your organization.
Yes, he did. He did make a comment to three nurses who are employed with Positive Healthcare, AIDS Healthcare Foundation here in Florida, and the comment that he made was that his cousin had died of AIDS. His cousin was as queer as a $3 bill. He lived that homosexual lifestyle, and he deserved what he got. We were actually in Tallahassee that day doing legislative visits and having a protest during the special session of the legislature for the property tax legislation that they were passing, and we were up there, we were protesting outside, and then some of us went in to do legislative visits. We actually had a bus coming from the St. Petersburg area where I'm located, and I was visiting another office at the time, and I had not heard about the comment until the next day, and I actually called each of the three nurses myself because I wanted to hear directly from them that someone could actually say something like that in this life and time right now. I couldn't believe that, especially a dentist, someone who has a career in the medical field, could actually say something along those lines. And especially since he sits on the Healthcare Council and he's vice chair of the Health Quality Committee, I was really in shock. So I wanted to hear actually from the horse's mouth, from all three of the nurses who were there, and I spoke with all three of them personally, and they said the same exact words and the same exact circumstances. So if I was going to believe anybody, I was going to believe those nurses, because he can deny all he wants without saying that. He's made some other comments also to other groups of individuals, along the same line of ignorance that he did with this comment.
Yes, I've noticed that he immediately issued a statement regarding the nurses, that he never said that, that he did acknowledge that his cousin was in fact did of AIDS or related illnesses, but that he never ever said those words. And this is not the first time he has run this pattern on visitors, isn't that right?
That's correct. He made another statement to a group of gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender students who were up there with Equality Florida, and he made a comment, and I don't know the exact wording, but I do know the gist of the comment, and the comment was that anyone who was gay needed to have psychological counseling. And of course, again, he denied that statement also. What I found sort of amusing when he said the denial about the statement that he made to our nurses, but he denied the whole statement blatantly, that, you know, he never said any of that. But he did have a cousin who died of AIDS. So now, what am I supposed to believe? He's going to deny the whole statement, but then actually, oh, I did have a cousin who died of AIDS. So actually, he did say something along those lines, because he did admit he does have a cousin who died of AIDS, and he did say that. So he's just denying the other part of the statement, which, again, I'm believing the three nurses who immediately, as they came out of the office there, they actually wrote that down as soon as they left the office to make sure that they had the wording correct.
Yes. Yes, and this man sits on which committees, what health care committees in Florida? He is a senator, I believe.
No, he is in the House of Representatives. He represents a district called Umatilla, which is sort of in the central part of the state. He is the vice chair of the Health Quality Committee, and he's also on the Health Care Council. And one of the actions that we're actually calling for, the Speaker of the House, Speaker Rubio, Marco Rubio, is the one who actually has the authority that he could get him removed from those committees. So we are actually calling for him to be removed from any committee that has anything to do with health care decisions.
Well, absolutely. That's the very least they can do. Of course, the man can hold his ignorant opinions. I suppose that's probably partly why his constituents put him in office, but certainly in a position of riding the health care providers regarding HIV and AIDS in Florida, he needs to be removed immediately. Now, Charlie Crist, the governor, is remaining completely silent on this. Has he said a word at this point?
No, he has not. He has not said one word regarding the issue. Actual Speaker Rubio has come out and basically talked about the fact that Representative Hayes has denied these comments. And again, he's denied other comments that he's made. And a couple of
There's
the
no
representatives
that he made
work along with him in the House of Representatives have said that, you know, he does have a gruff manner, but his, you know, his heart is in the right place. To me, if he equates anyone who has HIV and AIDS with deserving that they died from the disease, I don't think his heart is in the right place.
It's hard to believe that attitude is still prevalent at this late date. My Lord, it's almost 2007. The AIDS epidemic has been around, 30 years at this point?
Well,
it's just simply
on the actual beginning of the epidemic, you're looking at about 1981, 1982, but then there's actually been some evidence that there was presence in the blood supply going back into the 60s. So it had been around. There's new evidence showing that it's going back into the 60s, so it had been around for quite a while. And again, here, you know, we're looking at it at a good 25, 27 years of actually being in Florida. As far as, you know, when the epidemic started, it was in some of the larger metropolitan centers in San Francisco, New York. But now, as far as infections coming to Florida, we have 125,000 who are either living with HIV or AIDS in the state of Florida now, and our infection rates are disproportionately affecting African Americans in our state. We have 1 in 58 African American males who are infected with HIV. That was a new report that was put out by the Florida Department of Health called Silence Equals Death. And one of the new emphasis in prevention and advocacy in the state of Florida is working with the African American population to get the word out and to get people tested. One of the initiatives for this year is to try to get as many people tested so you know your status, because at least if you know your status, then you can start to take care of yourself. But if you don't know,
I completely agree.
You keep going on having unprotected sex, you're infecting more people.
Yes, and this whole issue of drug use in the gay community, there's a lot of meth usage, and I've been reading lately that meth is
pretty much a recipe for not taking your medications, developing more resistant versions of the virus, and drug use is certainly a huge issue in this whole mix. Is your organization addressing that also?
In fact, our organization and also the Department of Health, we try to target certain areas where you do testing and where you try to do prevention as much as possible. Programs that are sponsored in the state by the Department of Health and by ourselves is going out to particular bars or whatever and making sure that there's condoms available. And again, our prevention programs do come out and talk about crystal meth. There was an actual crystal meth manifesto that was done down in the Fort Lauderdale area where there was a full-page ad taken out in the newspaper regarding crystal meth use, and several of the leading politicians and people in the HIV/AIDS community who came out and said definitely that they did not use crystal meth and that they supported a lifestyle that was drug-free. And programs like that are going on throughout the state trying to make sure that the lifestyle that, you know, because of the crystal meth being connected so much with the gay lifestyle, that there are actually men out there who don't use crystal meth. And
yeah.
It's just...
Amazingly, this is true.
I'm sorry?
I was saying, yes, amazingly, this is true. I was just chuckling to myself that, yes, there's a huge number of us that don't use crystal meth. This is true.
Yes, and unfortunately, though, when you do use crystal meth and you are doing the party and play type behavior that you have with crystal meth, you're having more and more unprotected sex. And again, you expose yourself to the virus and you can actually get reinfected again. And then each time you get reinfected, you take on the resistance of the person who you're being reinfected with. So again, that's why they had that particular patient in New York City who was resistant to every medication except Fusion because he had been reinfecting himself over and over again.
I see. Well, Lisa, I'm also hearing that the things that we've talked about so far are really the tip of the iceberg. I'm hearing from your organization, too, that basically we're seeing a Halliburton, if you will, a hijacking, perhaps, of the entire AIDS and HIV support system in the state of Florida. Can you tell us what's happening with that? That it seems to be a little bit of a scandal brewing.
Well, for the past 8 years, the state of Florida has had a disease management program. And the disease management program contract had been with us, AIDS Healthcare Foundation, doing business as Positive Healthcare in the state of Florida. Out of the disease management programs, there's actually 7 in the state, and we are the only disease management program that met its fiscal goals in saving money for the state. And this past May, we were putting out an RFP, which is a call for renewing the contract, and when we bid for this contract again, there was another company that was a profit company. We are a not-for-profit company, a profit company that actually put in a bid also. And at the time when the bid came down, it was actually given to this other company, and that was announced on May 1st. Since May 1st, we have actually gone into litigation regarding the contract. We've actually had an administrative law judge who is reviewing our protest, and we have also started protests throughout the entire state, starting in Fort Lauderdale, going to St. Petersburg, Tampa, Orlando, then also Tallahassee. Then we also followed the governor in an excursion of where he was in Ocala, Inverness, and St. Petersburg all in one day. And then recently we just ended up with a candlelight vigil in Miami during the time that he was in his energy conference, his climate summit. And we've been trying to make sure that the governor and also the Agency for Healthcare Administration is aware of the impact that this would make on people with HIV and AIDS. Right now, there is a workforce of approximately 70 nurses throughout the state of Florida in 67 counties that work with the HIV and AIDS clients, and they do an at-home assessment. They work with the case management agencies to make sure that the services that each client needs are provided. And basically, we work to make sure that we're the voices of the clients also. This new contract, what they want to do with this new contract that was awarded to the for-profit company, is they want to shrink that workforce down to about 16 nurses. And they want to do most of this work telephonically. And as a registered nurse, one of the things that really bothers me is that, yes, I actually am pretty good on the telephone as far as telling whether someone is having a, you know, problems with their breathing, maybe, because I can tell from the way they're talking. But a lot of times people on the telephone will say, oh, yeah, I'm fine, I'm fine, I'm fine. But there's really a lot of other things going on, and they're not fine. You can't tell if somebody's taking their pills if you don't see the pill bottle and you don't look at the date that the pills were filled and you count the number of pills that are in there. You can't do that over the telephone. And part of that, registered nurses who are out there at these protests and at these rallies, is that we just don't see how this can be possible, that you can take care of a person over the telephone. And this for-profit company has not had as much experience in the field as we have. We've been doing this in the state of Florida for the past 8 years. And my philosophy on that is, you know, if it's not broken, don't try to fix it. This was something that, you know, we have met our fiscal goals for the disease.
Well, yes, you have.
With HIV and AIDS.
And now you're being forced to hire attorneys to defend the fact you're meeting the goals to begin with. This is incredible to me.
It is. It is. And we're in a legal situation where we're trying to look at the entire process and see how this process went, you know, at some point went awry, because by all means, when you look at a company who's served this community for 8 years and has met their fiscal goals as far as disease management, it just doesn't seem right that the contract could be awarded to someone else who doesn't have as much experience working with this population and who wants to do it at such a reduced number of people who are caring for this population.
We were in Tallahassee yesterday with
three patients who are in our program, and someone from one of the AIDS service organizations, and three of our staff, and we met with one of the deputy chiefs of staff for Governor Crist. And one of the things that we were told prior to the meeting was that we could not discuss anything about this contract litigation. And our call on that was then we want to put a human side to this whole issue. You know, it's a bureaucratic issue that's going on right now. It's a bureaucracy who made this decision to go with another company. It was the Agency for Healthcare Administration who made the decision on the contract. What we're trying to say now is that, you know, the process may be fine for picking a software company that the state may go with, or the process may be fine for picking a line of copiers and going out with the lowest bidder. But when you're talking about people's lives, you have to look at experience. You have to look at, we've been doing this for 8 years. We've been meeting our goals. You have to look at the satisfaction that our patients have with the program. We have over 5,000 letters signed where we have people saying they are outraged by this decision. And we have them, and we want to present them to the governor in person. And we have not been given that opportunity, even though we have asked several times to actually meet with the governor in person, and we've met with the deputy chief of staff on two occasions already. Again, we don't have access to this people's governor. That's one of his campaign statements, that he's going to be the governor for the people. Well, if you're the governor for the people, are you the governor for people with HIV and AIDS also? And if you are, then why can't we present you with these letters in person?
Well, I agree. And the fact that this is a for-profit company stinks to high heaven. We both know that when it's a for-profit company, they may be offering a lower bid, but that just means that the services fall even faster than you would expect, because for-profit companies are simply to do that, to make money. So then a large portion of the reduced cost is going to make profit. So the you're have fewer than 16 people on the phones. You're going to have people waiting for a phone call or waiting for a relative that calls and says someone has died. This is the way I'm seeing this. Is this is no service at all?
It's such a reduction in service that we see people in their homes. We see people face to face. Sometimes when a person is in crisis, you might see that person every day for a week until they pass that crisis. And if you're going to have to try to do this over the telephone, it doesn't work. This population, working with people with HIV and AIDS, you've worked so much on adherence. The medications that you take to treat the HIV and AIDS have many side effects, and it's hard for someone to take these medications when they're experiencing side effects. It's hard for someone to remember to take their medication. I mean, I'm a registered nurse, and yet sometimes I forget to take my high blood pressure medication. And this is something that I should be taking every single day, and it's only once a day. But I forget to take it sometimes, so I can't even... You know, it's hard for me to comprehend when someone has to take medications two or three times a day and to remember
and
to
also
take
many,
them every day.
Many pills at the same time. In other words, it's not just taking one pill three times a day. It's taking a different mix. In fact, three times a day could be an entirely different selection of pills all three times.
And it's also, and anymore with HIV and AIDS now, it's not just HIV and AIDS. For a lot of people who've had the disease for a long time. It's heart disease, it's diabetes, it's neuropathy. There are so many side effects from the disease and the medications that over time have developed, that back in the early days when there was just AZT, people weren't worrying about a long-term survival because people weren't surviving, you know, 10, 15 years. But now we have many clients who have been infected for 15, 20 years and who are having heart attacks, who are having strokes, who are having all types of other side effects from the medications and from the aging process also, that we never thought we'd have to deal with. Especially back in the early days of HIV and AIDS nursing, I never thought that I would be dealing with a lot of these long-term effects. I was dealing with helping families and helping loved ones with the passing of someone who passed away from HIV and AIDS. I wasn't really concentrating on the fact that people were living longer. So the whole area of nursing has even changed over the years. And again, for a not-for-profit company compared to a profit company, one that is out there in the business of doing this, you know, part of our philosophy with AIDS Healthcare Foundation is that we advocate for our patients. We fight for what's right for our patients. And
exactly, and for-profits advocate for the bottom line and for their stockholders.
That's correct. I mean, We work to not just in the United States. We work in 30 other countries. We work to make sure that we're trying to look at taking care of people all over the world. This company that would be coming in to take this contract would be looking at the bottom line and looking at what they do just in this area, just in Florida. They wouldn't look at doing education to communities or church groups or working with aid service organizations to help bring up their testing sites and to help them and be HIV testers for other organizations, to be on board of directors of other organizations. That's all the type of things that's encouraged by AIDS Healthcare Foundation. We're encouraged to volunteer in the community. We're encouraged to make sure that we are part of the HIV and AIDS community where we live. That is something that totally we're on healthcare councils. We're on Ryan White healthcare councils. We're on as many boards as we possibly can. And that's in addition to what we do as far as our work time. But that is something that our company treasures, where a for-profit company is not gonna look at the fact that, you know, you volunteer other areas and you put in more time. They're just going to want to make sure that you get your 40 hours in for them and that, you know, you're bright-eyed and bushy-tailed to be able to, you know, keep those cost savings down. You know, they want to save as much money as they can for the state.
Exactly. Now, if I'm understanding this whole picture correctly, there may be something a little untoward about this. Is it true that some of the high-level staff or some of the people who have financial interests in this company were part of part of the decision makers to choose the company? How did that work? I don't fully understand that. It seems pretty stinky to me.
Well, the gentleman who is the president of this company at one time was actually subcontracted by our company when we first came to Florida, had been the person who would go to Tallahassee and to be communicating with the Agency for Healthcare Administration, and then he left our company. So whether those relationships that were formed during that time had anything to do with decision-making.
Oh, they did.
You know, I can't say, I don't know for sure. But
I know you can't, but I can, and I say absolutely it. There's a relationship there. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I realize that you can't say that, but I certainly can. It stinks to heaven.
It just seems that when you look at the two sides and you look at the fact that we've been doing this for 8 years. We've been doing it successfully. We've been meeting our fiscal goals. And we're not exactly an organization that probably is well-liked in Tallahassee because we speak our minds. We're not exactly yes people. We go in and we make our voices heard. And if you would look at us in comparison to the for-profit company, who probably is not as vocal as we are, and we're vocal on not just the issues of the contract. We're talking about, you know, Governor Crist's silence on HIV and AIDS in this state. You know, we're talking about making sure that we work with the African-American communities that are being affected by HIV and AIDS. I don't think this for-profit company is going to be going out and trying to reach out to the black churches and working with the black pastors to work to be able to educate their parishioners about HIV and AIDS. That's not going to be on their agenda. That's on our agenda.
No, I completely agree. And as someone who has HIV, I can testify that everything that you're saying is true. I was diagnosed about 11, 12 years ago, and I'm one of who went along just fine with no opportunistic infections, no real consequences, until all of a sudden one day I just about died. Literally, I was put in the hospital with PCP pneumonia. I was on a ventilator in intensive care for 13 days. My CD4 count was a bit down to 13. I was one of those people that just suddenly fell off the edge of the cliff. Now, when I was diagnosed, they estimated that I had probably had it 10 years. So I have been living with it then apparently for about 20 years now. As it turned out, when I was diagnosed, that was when the new cocktail-type medications had just come out that very month. So, the doctor told me in the hospital, you know, you're basically dying. And then that month, the new meds came out, and here I am still around. But, you know, these medications are the side effects are legion. One of them absolutely makes you less able to focus, less able to remember taking the pills, or even if you took them. And when you combine that with getting older, and I'm 54, the clock is ticking. Yes, you need someone hands on. You need someone to come. This corporate 16 people are going to handle a whole state via telephone. This is just a death sentence in my estimation.
And I can go on and give you examples of how a nurse can make a difference in someone's life. I went into a hospital here in Pinellas County to visit a client who had had a heart attack. And I went into the critical care cardiac unit, and I was looking for his room. And I had been in that unit before. I'd been there several times to visit other people because I have a very good friend who has a heart condition. And I couldn't find his room. It was very peculiar because I was looking and I didn't see him in any of the rooms. And then I noticed that there was a room way in the back of the unit that I had never seen them use before. And it was the furthest from the nurse's station. And I went up to the nurse's station, and they said, oh, yes, that's where he is. He's back in that room. And as I'm walking back towards the room, I noticed that there's three or four trays stacked outside the door, and there's two or three bags of bed linen outside the door. That sort of struck me peculiar, because the rest of the unit was totally immaculate. Yes. I opened the door to his room, and the same thing was in the room. There was about four or five trays in there. There were two bags of bed linen, and his bed looked like it hadn't been straightened or the bed had been made in several days. And I mentioned to him, I said, oh, gosh. I said, you know, what's going on in here? Why are all these trays in here? And he said, well, no one comes in to pick up my tray. And I said, you're kidding. I said, why aren't they coming in to pick up your tray? And he said, well, I don't know. And I said, well, why are these bags of bed linens here? And he says, well, they just come in and they put the sheets on my bed table and they don't make my bed. I've been making my own bed. And I said,
good Lord,
you're kidding me. And then I said, well, have you had a bath, you know, since you've been here? And he said, no, I've been here for 12 days and Jesus, I haven't had a bath. So I immediately went out and I found the charge nurse, and I wasn't getting anywhere with the charge nurse. So I decided that I needed to call the hospital administrator into the room. So I went out to a phone and I called the hospital administrator, had that hospital administrator come down, and we talked about the lack of care that this person was getting. And the trays were removed, and he got a bath, and his bed was made. And this took all 7 hours. And I was there for 7 hours. And I wouldn't leave until I was sure that the client was bathed, had a clean bedding, and had all the trays removed from the room and had the floor washed. And unfortunately, to go back each day while he was in that unit to make sure that he was getting that same care. That's something you can't do over the telephone. And this is a hospital where they're supposed to be updated on HIV and AIDS. They're supposed to have diversity training. They're supposed to have cultural diversity. They're supposed to be non-judgmental. They're supposed to be aware that you cannot get HIV and AIDS from picking up somebody's tray, that you can't get HIV and AIDS from picking, you know, making somebody's bed and disposing of the dirty bed linen. You know, this is, you know, 2007. And this is a hospital that has passed all their certifications with JACO and all those, and Joint Commission, which does the surveying of hospitals to make sure that they're meeting all their goals. And yet, this still happens. So this is something that, as a nurse, you can't do over the telephone. And this is something that, for the care of HIV and AIDS clients, when you're a diabetic, you don't have a stigma about being a diabetic. When you have hypertension, you have high blood pressure, you don't have a stigma about hypertension or high blood pressure. When you have renal disease, when you're on dialysis, you don't have a stigma or discrimination about that, but you do with HIV and AIDS.
This is
and
just
an
astounding story.
That's why it's so important for HIV and AIDS clients to have that personal care of a nurse. And
well,
to have
Lisa,
those home visits. And to have the kind of contact that they get with Positive Healthcare, AIDS Healthcare Foundation.
I understand. It's Lisa, what can we do to help? The governor is basically to speak with you. Now, he's aware of it. There's no doubt that the governor is aware that you would like to speak to him. I cannot see how he could possibly not be, what with the candlelight visuals, the chasing him from city to city. It's just unimaginable. What can we, as listeners, do to help the situation? I don't know.
Well, one of the things I think that you can do is you can email his office. You can write him an actual letter. You can fax his office. You can let him know that part of the people that he's responsible for taking care of in this state have HIV and AIDS, and that.
Now, we should point out that the governor's office can. We should point out that the governor's office can be reached by just going to, if I'm not mistaken, myflorida.com. Isn't that correct? Myflorida.com.
Yes, myflorida.com. And then you can go, there is a link to the governor's office, and he has his email links right on there, and you can write him an email. They have his fax numbers on there. They have the telephone numbers on myflorida.gov.
Oh, yes, .gov. Yes, you're right. Gov. Not .com, .gov. That's right, yes.
And that's the best way to be outraged about this. I mean, this is an outrage. This is something that, you know, the HIV and AIDS community has a history of advocating. That's how a lot of the medications were fast-tracked. That's why a lot of the medications that we have today were brought about through the FDA, because of protests, because of advocating for people with HIV and AIDS, and we need to advocate now for people in the state of Florida with HIV and AIDS. We need to advocate so that the governor speaks out on this issue, that the governor and also the Agency for Healthcare Administration looks at the contract. This isn't a contract for getting a new software system. This isn't a contract for getting a new copier at the Capitol. This is a contract for caring for people. And if I was in the government, I mean, I couldn't sleep at night if I knew that this kind of decision was affecting so many people. I just don't understand, to me, I just don't see the logic of how this decision could have been made. It just doesn't.
I understand.
I don't
yes,
understand.
Yes, I do.
I just don't understand, and I'm hoping that the governor someday and the Agency for Healthcare Administration will start to actually look inside their hearts and say, you know, maybe we made the wrong decision.
Well, let me ask you this. This may be a little bit delicate, but I've worked with nonprofits before.
Uh-huh.
And I've worked for, well, a volunteer basis. I've worked, well, let me just put it like this. Nonprofits are very dependent on contracts. You know, money is not easy, doesn't flow from the faucets in a nonprofit world. And this I know for a fact. Is the loss of this survivable? In other words, can you folks hang on? How bad is this situation for AIDS Healthcare Foundation? Sorry to have to ask this.
Well, this is, of course, AIDS Healthcare Foundation, whether the contract is awarded back to us or not, AIDS Healthcare Foundation is still going to be here. We're still going to be a voice in Florida. We're a very strong voice in California, where our headquarters is. We're still going to be here. What it's going to mean is that there's going to be 8,000 patients in the state of Florida, disease management patients, who are not going to have the care that they receive in the manner that they received it. And that could also mean that there may not be as many positions in the state. And when that time comes, that will, you know, that will be evaluated at that time to say whether, how many positions or whatever. I really don't know yet, because the one thing I do know is any time that AIDS Healthcare Foundation has had a blow like this, let's say, they have tried to make sure that everyone has a position, and everyone, they try to make sure that they can fit people into other lines of business and into other areas in the company. Whether that's going to be able to be accomplished in Florida if we do not get this contract, that I'm not sure of, but I do know that as far as security, knowing that I know that my senior management is very diligent on making sure that we're going to be here in the state of Florida, and that we are going to be voices in the state of Florida, and that we're going to be caring for people in the state of Florida. We did have an HMO. We have just been approved for an HMO in Broward and Dade County that will start in January. So that will be an additional line of business for us in Florida that we didn't have before. So again, some people will transition over to that line of business. Again, it's too soon to be able to say how it's going to affect us in the long run, because people are still going to have to want to join our HMO. And we know that there are quite a few people who will join our HMO because of our success that we've had with our clients in Broward and Dade.
Yes. Yes.
Well, so, but to give you an actual, we're still going to be here. I'm not sure that we're going to be in the realm of disease management. And that's sad, because we've been successful in the realm of disease management. And our clients have high satisfaction levels with our disease management. The providers that we work with, the infectious disease doctors, all have high levels of satisfaction, and we've also met our savings as far as fiscal levels with the state. So, to me, again, if it's not broken, why are you trying to fix it?
Absolutely. They're trying to fix it because the gentleman established that relationship and then went to the dark side, is how we would probably phrase it on this network. We tend to use those analogies fairly often. There's a whole lot of stuff that seems to be slipping over to the dark side. How does AIDS Healthcare Foundation, how does it interface with the, or how did it interface with the, for instance, in Tallahassee, there's Big Ben Cares. Are they a part of you, or you a part of them? Does it affect agencies?
Well, what Big Ben Cares, they're what's called an AIDS service organization. And an AIDS service organization has several functions they can have in a particular area. Most AIDS service organizations do case management. They have clients that they have through either Ryan White, or they have a PAC waiver case management component also. The case management through PAC waiver means it's a Project AIDS Care Today. It means you must have had an AIDS diagnosis, and that you must have had an opportunist infection to have this special waiver that is part of Medicaid. Then if you were a Ryan White client with a case management agency or an AIDS service organization, I use those terms sort of interchangeably, that if you have HIV, you can be a Ryan White client. So Big Bend Cares, if it's a case management agency, the way a case management agency interfaces with AIDS Healthcare is the case manager and the nurse care manager would work together to provide a plan of care for that client. And that can be anywhere from having in-home nursing to having massage therapy to having structural adaptations to someone's home, let's say, if they need ramps, if they need wheelchairs or they need shower bars. These are all services that you would work together with an AIDS service organization and AIDS Healthcare Foundation, Positive Healthcare, would work together to develop this plan of care for the client for the services that they need. Again, the gambit of services is all based pretty much on individual needs of the client. You know, I've seen many situations where people've had to have grab bars, ramps done, you know, down to having home-delivered meals for someone who is homebound, who's unable to leave their home, and for a short period of time where, let's say, they were just released from the hospital and they're unable to cook for themselves. Those are the type of services that you work as a nurse care manager. You work to make sure that the client receives those type of services and till they're back on their feet again.
Understand. I should tell you, I monitor our chat room during the program, and you are very well received. There's a lot of interest in everything you're talking about. There is a question that you could answer far better than me. The question has to do with the distinction between AIDS and HIV, and in as much as that many people don't fully understand what that means, AIDS, HIV, how does that work?
Oh, absolutely.
How does it relate?
The virus that causes AIDS is called HIV, human immune deficiency virus. HIV, you can be infected with HIV, and you can have an HIV status. When you develop an AIDS diagnosis, is when you have your T cells or your CD4 count drop below 200 or 14%, and you've also had an opportunist infection. An opportunist infection being something like PCP pneumonia, CMV. There's 26 different diagnoses that are out there that become an opportunist infection. An opportunist infection is when your immune system is unable to fight off actually microorganisms and bacteria that are actually resident on all of us. But when your immune system is compromised, you're not able to fight off these things that are resident on our bodies and around our bodies. So that's how you develop an opportunist infection. And to have that AIDS diagnosis, again, your CD4 or your T cells have to drop below 200, and you have to have had an opportunist infection, such as PCP, pneumocystis pneumonia, which you had. When you were saying that your T cells were very low, you would have an AIDS diagnosis.
Yes, I had a full-blown AIDS.
Once you're classified according to the CDC classifications, the Center for Disease Control classifications, once you have an AIDS diagnosis, even if you start taking medication and your CD4, your T-cell count goes up to 700, it doesn't matter. Once you've had the AIDS diagnosis, you're always considered to have AIDS, not to have HIV.
I hope that answers the
question.
It did far more eloquently than I ever could. A doctor explained to me once that the immune system, once it's been beaten the hell out of by the HIV virus and you have an AIDS diagnosis, that really it never fully recovers. My T cell count has never gone above 400 since.
That has to do when people are diagnosed. if you were diagnosed, let's say, at a time when you had 500 T cells or CD4 cells in your body, and then you went on medication as they fell lower and you started on your medication, you would actually be able to probably achieve a level that was much higher. But when, if you ever hear that adage, what goes up must come down, or what goes down must go up, if you go down to a really low point where your immune system is so severely damaged, you can only do so much repair to your immune system. So if you go down and let's say you have, you know, I've known clients who've had 3 T cells. They've named them, you know.
I've heard about that. I heard of a client. I didn't meet the man. He's passed away, but he had one, and he apparently named that T cell. That's just so courageous, isn't it?
Yes, I mean, you know, when you look back, and I've met many people over the years who have had 1 or 2 or 3 or 10 T cells and who have climbed back from that and who have led full, you know, lives that have good quality of life and who take their medications and take them faithfully and religiously and follow what the doctors say, and they have built their immune systems back. But again, though, they've built their immune systems back, but they're not like they would be if they had more of an immune system when they found out they were positive. And that's where, again, where it is so very important to have people knowing their status and to be tested, because you don't want your immune system to go that low, because the length of survival and your prognosis as an HIV and AIDS client has to do with when you were diagnosed and how many CD4 T cells you had at time of diagnosis. Your prognosis is better if you have more of your immune system intact. You can still live a long and prosperous life if you take your medications, if you have, you know, an immune system. But the more your immune system is intact, just guarantees you more time. Really, it guarantees you more time, even with the medications. The medications right now can keep you alive for a long period of time. But again, you know, you have to take your medications, you have to be adherent, and you can develop resistance. I mean, I don't know, as an HIV and AIDS client, but whether you're still on your same regiment that you started or whether you're
taking
your medicine. Oh, Lord,
it's changed a million times. The cocktail has changed and changed and changed. I'm on version 95 by now.
And again, you know, that has to do with the fact that your immune system was pretty well shot when you first found out and when you were in the hospital. Your immune system, you know, really took a beating. It's not, unfortunately,
yeah,
your immune system is not like that Timex watch. It, you know, it takes a beating and keeps on ticking. No, you know, you need to build that immune system back up before it can take a beating.
Well, Lisa, you are remarkable. I can always judge how the interest of a guest by using the chat room as a barometer, and you get the 110% mark. We've kept you on the air at an awfully long time. I'm just so impressed with you. You are absolutely coming apart with this, and I'm so impressed, and I'm so grateful that there are people out there like you, because I think you know that you're few and far between.
Well, in our company, in AIDS Healthcare Foundation, there are a lot of dedicated, motivated individuals like myself. I don't know if there would be as much dedication and motivation with a for-profit company. But I do know that there are many people who are very dedicated to the cause that work for AIDS Healthcare Foundation and who are as motivated, if not more motivated than myself, and really believe in what they do. Like I've said many times before, this is not just a job to me. This is my life. This is what I was put here to do. I was put here to work with this community, and this is where I will be, and this is where I will stay till my last breath. I will stay working with the HIV and AIDS community.
Well, I should tell you that I am going to continue to mention this on a nightly basis at myflorida.gov, and to send an email to see your organization because of everything that you've told us this evening. I think it's very important. I also want to let you know that we in fact, I'm just reading now in the chat room that they want you to come back again. They're saying that you're just wonderful. They're amazed, and I completely agree. And I want you to know that you do not have to have, you or anyone else in your organization, you do not have to have a set interview. You are welcome to pick up the phone at any time, and I'll put you on air right away to give us any sort of updates or action alerts, anything that we can do to help. I think you can count on this listener audience to go to Florida.gov and send those emails. We are a bunch of crazy activists here. That's what we do best, and so you can count on us for that. And honest to God, Lisa, you brought tears to my eyes several times tonight. You are an amazing, amazing woman.
Well, thank you very much, and I do promise to keep you updated. In fact, whenever I have an update, you will be right on the top of my list to make sure that you know that whether there is an event coming up or whether we've heard something that's come along from the governor's office or from our litigation, I'll make sure that you know. And I just have to say, actually, one last thing, is I have
Please.
To say hello to my son, Brenton, who's listening in Vermont at this time. And a little plug to him. Hello, honey. I love you.
Well, hello, honey. We love you, too. and I'm so glad you're listening up in Vermont. Lisa, you were a joy. You were a joy. And I'm so impressed with everyone I've spoken to at your organization today. You've been everyone I've spoken to has been above top level professional, I'm so impressed. And the invitation for calling in and giving us updates also is national level too.
Okay.
If there's something from the national level office that needs to go out, that's what this program is for. It's to give a voice other than just print to contact a large number of people at one time, and people
really
will continue to hear
this. But I really appreciate the opportunity to be on your show, and I appreciate you taking an interest in our cause. It has been a wonderful experience being with you this evening, and I really do appreciate it, and I'm so glad that you're here with us after being positive for so many years, and I'm glad that you're able to be here on the radio with us. It just shows that if you take your medications and you take care of yourself, that you can live a long and active and prosperous life.
That's right. Sometimes after the diagnosis, if you wait 20 years, you'll end up on the radio. So you just never... if you wait around long enough, anything is possible, right, Lisa?
Yes.
God bless you. And again, thank you so much for being with us tonight. And thank you for spending such a long time with us. You've been with us for over an hour, and you've done an excellent job. And thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Take care.
Good night. Wow. That was an interesting conversation. I really admire her. She is one in a million. I tell you what, let's go ahead and what we'll do is we'll take a... We've been running for over an hour straight, so what we'll do is we'll go ahead, instead of just taking your regular bottom of the hour break, what we'll do is we'll do our dance track of the night. Now, the dance track of the night is not really a dance track. It, in fact, I don't know how to classify this at all. Shirley MacLaine singing. Now, you expect to see Shirley MacLaine in what was the movie? The family movie. I've forgotten the name, but it's just marvelous. But what inspired me to choose this song tonight is the fact that I saw Sunset Boulevard again over, yes, thank you, Bob, terms of endearment, thank you. If it weren't for the chat room, I wouldn't be able to function on the air, I assure you. But I saw Sunset Boulevard again over the weekend. And, of course, if you haven't seen that, you simply must. It's an old black and white with Gloria Swanson. But Shirley MacLaine has managed to do the Sunset Boulevard movie in one song. And it's just, in fact, I've not read that this is based on Sunset Boulevard. I've no proof of that. But in fact, it simply must be. This track is called She's a Star, an amazing track. It is Sunset Boulevard in 6.5 minutes. Agnes, if you'd roll that thing.
Faded drapes, a crooked shade, a matted rug on the floor, a dirty tray filled with cigarettes, and a rusty lock on the door. There she lives, just below the stairs, in a room that's marked number 3. But her mind lives apart, in an old memory. And the crowd rushes to the rope. Hey, I got here first. Let me take a peek. See the ring. See the sable coat. What I earn a year, she can earn a week. And that man, he's her gigolo. Even though he chauffeurs her car. Well, why not? After all, she's a star. And she lives high up on a hill with a swimming pool and an iron gate. Once a prince traveled round the world just to pay a call, and she made him wait. Every day, in a tub of ice, they deliver fresh caviar. So what? After all, she's a star. Peeling paint, a broken chair, a dying fern on the sill, beside the bed, faded photographs of a smiling girl on a hill. Just a room known as number 3, where the summer breeze doesn't blow. And her mind lives apart in a long, long ago. And the crowd rushes to the rope. Hey, I got here first. Let me take a peek. See the ring, the sable coat. What I earn a year, she can earn a week. And that man, he's her gigolo. Even though he chauffeurs her car. So what? After all, she's a star. And she lives high up on a hill with a swimming pool and an iron gate. Once a prince traveled round the world just to pay a call, and she made him wait every day in a tub of ice. They deliver fresh caviar. Well, so what, after all? She's a star when she's there, way up on the screen. Isn't she a joy? Isn't she a prize? With that smile, silent and serene, and that little light shining in her eyes. And that smile and that little light will forever stay as they are. She'll endure, that's for sure. She's a star. And the crowd rushes to the rope. Hey, I got her first, let me take a peek. See the ring, see the sable coat. Why earn a year, she can earn a week. And that man, he's a gigolo, even though he chauffeurs her car. Well, why not? After all, she's a star. And she lives high up on a hill with a swimming pool and an iron gate. Once a prince traveled around the world just to pay a call, and she made him wait. Every day in a tub of ice, they deliver fresh caviar. Well, so what? After all, she's a star. When she's there, way up on the screen, isn't she a joy? Isn't she a prize? With that smile, silent and serene, and that little light shining in her eyes. That smile and that little light will forever stay as they are. She'll endure, that's for sure.
And there you have it, my friends. That's Norma Desmond in approximately 6 minutes. Can you believe Shirley MacLaine did that? I didn't even know the woman could sing. What an amazing track that is. And I'm so glad I had that to play for you. It looks like we have Jim on the line with us again. Jim, welcome back to Strictly Confidential.
Hey, Peter. How you doing?
I'm doing well. That last that guest, she was something else. I really don't want to follow her, to tell you the truth. I have lots of news I could go through, but you know, considering that she's talking about a situation where people are going to be dying, you know, it's hard to read it. So I'm glad you're there. How are you doing?
Well, a little. My mood has changed since my initial call, and. You know, this is something that you try to live with, and you try to live with as gracefully as you possibly can. I guess that initially, back in the early 80s, it was basically like being a passenger on the Titanic. But now there are lifeboats available. And story tonight, your personal story, has been one that has touched me very, very deeply. And
well, bless your heart. Thank you, Jim.
I can only wish you the very, very best, and that is so little, so trite. But it isn't meant to be in that frame of mind, because I, too, have known so many people whom I've lost. I mean, you know, back in the early 70s, I lost 10 classmates at my alma mater, the Citadel, in Vietnam. And I thought to myself, well, this has got to be the end of this sort of thing. And then as the 70s turned into the 80s, so many more friends and so many more people who were very dear to me were lost to another type of situation. Much deadlier than anything that could be manufactured by any arsenal in the world. And yet so little was done. I can never forget Reagan for not mentioning this disease until the second year of his second administration. And that is,
yeah, it always galls me when I hear someone praising Reagan. That's the first thing I think of is how the jackass could sit there in office and never mention it. As long as it was a gay disease, it was just fine, wasn't it, Jim?
Right, and, you know, it took them, 2 years to translate it from GRID to AIDS and things of that nature. And what I can remember, the CDC could not even get an electron microscope. And,
Yes.
And so it goes. But I am very proud of you for having shared with me your own personal situation and having brought to this forum a professional as the last guest on your program. And the main thing is the installation of hope, faith, human charity, and I think in the face of this adversity, dignity, and the ability to say, no, I'm not going to give in. I am going to fight. And even to coin the phrase from your friend Gloria Gaynor in that old song, I Will Survive.
Oh, my God. He spoke the name. He spoke the name that thou shalt not mention. Oh, that's funny. I'll have to run that Gloria Gaynor track one night just for us. I'll tell you, I swore her off. You remember my rant, no doubt.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah.
But that was an awfully good track. I did get rid of a lot of it, but I have to secretly admit I didn't delete that one.
Understandably so. And I just hope you will continue and maintain. And I really have this evening found a new respect for you as a person, as a participant on this particular broadcast medium. And
well, thank you, Jim. That's very kind of you.
Okay? And that's all I can really say. Words defy most other expressions and are a very poor vehicle, at the very least, to project empathy, sympathy, understanding from not only a distance, but a very experiential point of view. Okay.
Thank you, Jim. I know that's from the heart, and thank you. I appreciate that. Sharing. We share so much on this network, and that's just part of me. And so, you know, I could make jokes. You're like, I'm like a cockroach. I'll live forever. I mean, you know, I could make a lot of jokes, but actually, it is very serious, especially in light of the conversation that we had earlier with Lisa, so jokes are not something I really feel like doing right now. But
no problem. But, you know, I just wanted to call in as a source of understanding, support, and best wishes.
Thank you, Jim.
All right. Take care. Good
okay.
Night.
Thank you, sir. What a nice call from our Uncle Jim at a secret, undisclosed location somewhere in the eastern United States. And if he writes that novel, there are a lot of people going down, I tell you. Oh, that's a kiss and tell. That's going to be an expose that was good. That will take down governments. Yes, it will. Now, before we are getting late in the evening, I do want to do this, because over the last few weeks, I have been rather harsh on black Southern preachers in the Pentecostal type. It seems that a lot of them have gone over to the evil forces of the Republican Party, and some of them are believing, you know, this mess that they're threatened by the gay community because the gay community has some sort of hidden agenda to replace all of their legislatures and people that they've worked so hard to elect to office with gay people, and they're mixing that in with the whole gay marriage and sodomy thing. But I stand corrected at this point. There's a minister I'd like you to hear. Now, what this is part of, CNN has formed some sort of an alliance with you. And basically what they're doing is you send a video into YouTube you can have this your question asked at the political candidates when the on July 23rd in Charleston, South Carolina. In any case, I was very proud of this minister, in as much as the question that he asked is just amazing. Agnes, if you'd run the Reverend clip, it's very short. Thank you.
I'm Reverend Reggie Longcry. I'm the pastor of Exodus Missionary Outreach Church in Hickory, North Carolina. Senator Edwards said his opposition to gay marriage is influenced by his Southern Baptist background. Most Americans agree it was wrong and unconstitutional to use religion to justify slavery, segregation, and denying women the right to vote. So why is it still acceptable to use religion to deny gay Americans their full and equal rights?
So there you have it. I stand corrected, and it's amazing how people who are fair-minded and have a loving heart understand this, and apparently not everyone has fallen victim. You know, in my chair, I have bad news, and so it's easy for me to go off on a rant, you know, but it's thank you, that minister. And, of course, that question will probably never be asked at the debates, and if they do ask it, they'll phrase it and present it in such a way that only the Democratic candidates have to answer it, because if the Republicans answered it, they would have to state a position. Of course, this is not allowed in the way the politics goes in this country these days, so it will be asked about 12 different ways by Wolf, whatever his name, and it will no doubt be asked of the Democratic candidates. I wanted to tell you a little bit about this. Do you remember the Dyke gangs? Now, this was part of Bill O'Reilly, and we discredited that, and we talked about that for several days about that they, you know, the Dyke gangs were supposed to be breaking into people's homes and stealing their children's and all this sort of thing. So the bottom line is, I just wanted to tell you the lengths to which WorldNet Daily will go to avoid telling one the truth. WorldNet Daily is just all over this. They are saying, you remember the detective who, in fact, was not a detective at all? He was something that, as it turns out, was a crime analyst, which, of course, is meaningless. I could be hired by a medical firm to look at medical records, and I could be called a medical analyst. It wouldn't mean anything. So, in fact, he was being called a detective over and over by O'Reilly, but he was not. They're saying in the WorldNet Daily report, Rod Wheeler, who is an experienced police detective, they're going right along with whatever O'Reilly said, with national concern over lesbians recruiting kids 10 years old, the same statistics. They are going on to a Memphis report where lesbian gang members are sodomizing young schoolgirls. And, I'm not going to go through the whole thing. I just wanted to show you the this article actually runs 7 pages of a tightly typed text. It's just amazing the lengths that they go to back up what's actually just pure, outright, everyday lies. Just never ceases to amaze me. By the way, there's an AP poll out that GOP voters are picking none of the above when it comes to the Republican candidates. Gee, that's funny. That's exactly what the Democratic voters are choosing. None of the GOP candidates. And we also have from The Advocate headline, Will Rosie O'Donnell Join The Apprentice? And so from Strictly Confidential, Who the Hell Cares? And we have another article. The IRS has been sued over a sex change deduction. Now, this is interesting. I'd like to get this in before the show ends. We have a tormented man. He was a father. He was a construction worker. He was 57 years old. He lived in suburban Boston, and he finally went through with a sex change operation. And she wrote off the $25,000 in medical expenses on her taxes. But the IRS is disallowing the deduction and saying that it was purely cosmetic and not medically necessary. Now, this was a Coast Guardsman, and as I said, a construction worker. He suffered a long time and finally did this, and he is bedamned if he's going to let the IRS say that. He would get a refund, I believe, of approximately $5,000 if they allowed this deduction, but to him it's not really about the money so much as it is about the prejudice that's clearly being stated by the IRS by claiming this position. Rhiannon is his name. He's suing the IRS in the case of transgender rights advocates, and they're hoping to force the tax agency to treat the same sex change operations the same as appendectomies or heart bypass or other deductible medical procedures. Case is set to go on trial July the 24th. An estimated 1,600 to 2,000 people undergo a sex change therapy, surgery rather, in the United States every year. There was an article a few days ago, too, about a prisoner who I think he was in prison for life, who wanted a sex change operation at the expense of the state. And the operation would have cost $20,000, I believe is what the estimate was that I read, yet the state has spent almost $80,000 fighting it because they don't want to spend the money on that. And it just never ceases to amaze me how bizarre it all is. How bizarre. Also, you know, this thing about the Matthew Shepard, there's a whole lot of Matthew Shepard material I want to go through. We're not going to go through it tonight, but we'll have to go through it over several days because I really do want to get this out. The articles, it's a whole collection of information. One of them that is most striking to me is that one of the reasons that it's needed, it allows the federal law enforcement agencies to intervene when local law enforcement agencies don't care to enforce the law, or when they're actually acting in a way. This is an example. A District of Columbia police lieutenant, he headed the police unit that investigates extortion. Let me say it again. He's a police lieutenant. He heads the police unit that investigates extortion. Well, he was arrested by the FBI for attempting to extort $10,000 from a man who was seen leaving a gay bar. Now, this is a common occurrence. Police officers refer to the practice as fairy shaking. The problem is widespread, and it's one of the reasons that, hate crimes, would be a hate crime against a gay man, and it just goes to show you how warped some of this stuff really is. And also with the hate crimes legislation, you know, the right is making up completely bogus hate crime statistics right out of thin air. They know they're lying. They're well aware of it, but nonetheless, it doesn't stop them from this huge, and it's just massive, a disinformation campaign to attempt to derail this legislation. It's coming out left and right. What they're saying is, from the Concerned Women and of America and Focus on the Family. Here's some of the made up health statistics. They're claiming, they're saying this about the GLBT individuals, that we are claiming that abuse is epidemic, but one third of the hate crime statistics are for name calling. Of course, this is a complete lie. Name calling, you're perfectly welcome to stand in your pulpits and call us anything you want. It's just that you can't physically assault us anymore, and this is causing a huge amount of concern from the Christian right. So they're making up statistics that a third of hate crimes against GLBT individuals are just name-calling, and that what we're trying to do is legislate their freedom of speech. This is, of course, not true at all. Oh, they're bringing in all sorts of stories about children that have been abused, women that have been murdered by gay men, according to these articles. They're introducing a new 40-minute DVD from the Family Research Council on hate crimes laws, and it features Tony Perkins. All you have to do is send him $20, and you can get all the propaganda you can handle in 40 minutes. I have enjoyed being with you this evening. I really have, and thank you for joining me on Strictly Confidential, this crazy little thing that we call love, from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday. So in closing, here's Cynthia Manley reminding you to...